Okay, we're in Perek Yud Aleph, Sefer Shmuel, page 64. So it says, Vayal Nachash Ha'amoni. It's an interesting guy's name. Bad guy.
Snake.
His name's a snake. A snake! That's the guy's name. It's a snake. Yeah. Yeah. Probably not. Question if he was born with this name, or perhaps he ended up just liking the name so much, or it represents the type of person he is. Very strange things that he does, we'll see in this parak. That's why perhaps he gave himself the name Snake. Anyway, he was Ha'amoni. He came from Amon. We'll see the significance in that as well. V'yichanal Yavesh Gilad. So he went and encamped by this little city by the name of Yavesh Gilad, where a lot of Jewish people lived. The Yomru, obviously the reason for this was he wanted to fight them. And because he was very powerful, he was certainly going to defeat them and kill them out. So anyone who has a little bit of seichel, realize, bottom 64, Pasuk Aleph, that what's the point of dying? Might as well give up and live. So, Vayomer kol anshei Yavesh el Nachash, so the people of the city turned to this powerful man, to Nachash, and they said, you know what, karas lanu bris, let's set up a covenant with you, benavdecha, and I'll serve you. We'll work, we'll give you huge taxes to you, we'll work like crazy, and you'll benefit tremendously from it, because after all, you can make a lot of money from our work. We look at the Mesudas David over here. Karis lanu bris. Why would they be so interested in setting up a covenant with this guy? For the obvious reason, leval hamisosanu. We don't want to die. Otherwise, if we don't set up a covenant with you, you're going to end up killing us. So that's what they said. You know, we'll give you money. We'll give you whatever you want, and things will be nice and fine. Now, before we see the next pasuk, which is on the next page, we're going to end up seeing in a moment that the Jewish people will fight this nation, will fight this guy by the name of Nachash Ha'amoni. And the question is, why does this happen now? Why is Nachash starting up with the Jewish people? Why is he starting up specifically with the city of Yavesh Gilad? And also, why at this particular point in time? So if you see in the English on page 65, I underlined the significance of Yavesh Gilad, which it says is a relatively minor city on the east bank of the Jordan, which cannot be easily defended by the rest of the nation. And he timed his attack when there was a vacuum of leadership, because Shmuel, as we said before, was getting older, and Shaul, who was the king, but not everyone accepted him as an authority figure, as a king, and therefore he felt that this was the best strategic time to attack the Jewish people. It's brought down also by the Malbim. The Malbim says, which is not written down over here, the Malbim says that that Nachash Ha'amoni, this gentleman, not a gentleman, why did he come to the city Yavesh Gilad? Because the people that lived in Yavesh Gilad came from the family of Shaul HaMelech. Saul just became a king. So, and right, from Mibnei Shevet Binyamin, which came from the tribe of Binyamin, and therefore he understood that his authority was being compromised, because he just heard that there's a king which helps defend the Jewish people, and therefore because of this, he wanted to show, you know, where I'm still boss, I'm still more powerful, your king has no power at all. So says the Malbim of why he attacked now, and why he specifically attacked the city of Yavesh Gilad. The Alshich gives a different reason. We're going to end up seeing that Shaul wins this war, right? Sorry if I broke the suspense, but he ends up, the Jewish people win. And we mentioned that when he was appointed as king and he was hiding in the coat room and he wasn't really sure of himself, some people said, this is not a king, I don't want him, forget it, it'll take someone else. And therefore, because of this, there was a lot of people that didn't respect Shaul. However, Shaul is going to do something standing up as a king, as a leader does, and because of his success in this war, it's going to cause that everyone is going to actually now acknowledge and recognize Shaul as the true leader, as the true king of Klal Yisrael. So it's possible that these things were set into motion at this specific time in order that Shaul would be able to increase his name and respect. Continuing the next pasuk Bet. Yeah.
What
did
they say
that
they
wrote in English? Oh. That they hadn't punished those who did the concubine
the last time. It's a whole story.
Yeah. I was hoping you wouldn't notice that. The end of Shoftim, it discusses a terrible tragedy which occurred to a concubine, the Pelegish Begiva. And as it says, what does it say over here? How does they
go along with the rest of the nation in punishing the
people who did the effect? Right. So he thought that this would be therefore an appropriate nation to attack, which people disconnected themselves from them. They were not really, they didn't go along with the Joneses, so therefore they were more vulnerable to attack. No one would support them because of this episode which occurred in this terrible tragedy, which is in great length at the end of
Shoftim.
That's also brought down. But I didn't see that in any other sources except for down here, so I didn't present it. But nonetheless, moving on to the next pasuk bet. Vayomer lehem Nachash ha'amoni. So now Nachash was given a great deal. Cash galore, all the money he can think of, taxing these people to death. They're going to be his servants, slaves. Can you imagine the financial benefits this guy, Nachash Hamoni, would be able to realize? Nachash didn't care about money. He didn't care about anything except for putting down the Jewish people. And what did he say? Incredible thing. We're going to read this literally. We're going to see three other explanations. Bezos echros lachem. This is the only way I will accept a relationship, a covenant with you. If you do the following. Not such a big deal. Just bin kor lachem kol ein yamin. Just take your right eye and pluck it right out. I do not want any of you to have a right eye. You'll have one eye. So right? You only have one eye. So you'll still be able to see. You know, you're not going to be as great of workers, but that's what I want you to do. Now, why do I want you to do that? Says Nachash, v'samtiha cherpa al kol Yisrael, because it'll be a humiliation and embarrassment for all the Jewish people, and they'll see your city that every single person is missing a right eye, and they'll all know it's because I'm powerful, and your weak, worthless king Shaul is exactly that, weak and worthless, and therefore that's what I want to do. I'd rather put you down, and that's perhaps the reason why you can now understand why he's called a snake. You know, that's a real Nachash. Because a Nachash, if we look at the first time we find a serpent, a snake, we find that it's actually brought down in the Gemara that the snake is comparable to a Baal Lashon Hara, to someone who speaks gossip. Why? So the old reason is the problem of the person who speaks Lashon Hara is instead of elevating themselves, making their own lives better, they are just as happy by putting someone else down, which is what a snake does. It bites a person in the ankle, doesn't really derive any benefit from it. It kills someone, or poisons them with their venom, and they slither away. But they only care about putting someone else down, dropping them down to their low level, as a snake is. So that's perhaps the reason why, I didn't see this anywhere, why he's called Nachash, because instead of him getting all this money, having slaves and taxes, which would lift him up, his stature, he was just as happy staying where he was and dropping everyone else down by doing this atrocious request, by requiring them to literally gore out their right eyes. Now, what exactly does that mean? So Rashi sticks to the simple explanation at first, as we see the top Rashi on page 66. Kol ein yamin means kemashmo. What do you want me to explain about it? It's exactly as it sounds. That's exactly what he wanted to do, which makes sense because he wanted to completely humiliate the Jewish people. However, it's possible he didn't literally want them to gore out the right eye. It was actually perhaps a metaphor to something else, and they could still keep their right eye. However, what does it mean? Umeder Shagada quotes Rashi quoting the Medrash Shmuel. He says, this is what I want. Heviuli sefer Torahchem shenasnam yamin. Give to me your Torah scrolls, which were given from the right. First of all, except for some unfortunate people like myself who are lefties, most people use their right hand to write, so therefore it's one reason why the Torah is called Yamin. It's on the right. But also, the right also has other connotations. So he said, when it says, give me the right eye, it means give me your Torah. Because why? What's the big deal? Why do you want the Torah scroll? What's bothering you so much about this Torah? So Rashi says, because what was bothered with him is what's written in it. Al Shekasabo, because it says, Lo Yavo Amoni Umuavi, Bekal Hashem. It says that for whatever reason, anyone who comes from Amon or Moav is not allowed to enter into the Jewish nation, which is referring specifically to a Ammoni or Moabi man. However, an Ammoni or a Moabi woman is allowed to marry, and the most famous is Rus, exactly, that Boaz, who came up with this concept on his own, that it says Moabi, not Moavis, so therefore that's allowed. However, Nachash was a guy, and he was very offended that he was treated like as a second-class citizen. And of course, you have to understand why Ammon and Moab, they ill-treated the Jewish people, is the basic reason. Food, water, right. So because of that, as a punishment, we don't want such a relationship with people who are not hospitable and involved in Gemilas Chasadim. So Lo Yavo Ammoni Moavi. So therefore he said, because of that, give me this Torah. And it doesn't say what he'd like to do with it. However, some say it means to burn it, to destroy it, which could mean to destroy. Oh, it does continue?
The
Esrafa. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that word. The Esrafa, right, good. All right, I was wondering where that was. I thought it was in my other sefer. No, right, no. To take it and burn it, which some people say it means burn the entire thing because it's, if you wrote that, the whole thing is worthless. Or it means let's take some white out and I'll erase that one sentence, right? Which, interestingly enough, was one of the things which is became a tragedy was actually a miracle. We know that there's a story by a king who's brought down in the Talmud, King Talmai, which asked 70 scholars to go into 70 different rooms. They didn't know what was the purpose, and he put them in all different rooms. He said, write the Torah, which ended up becoming the Septuagint, which we talk about during Hanukkah time, because that's the one of the Talmai period. Septuagint means 70, right, because it was 70 scholars that wrote it. And the miracle was that they translated, when they translated it into Greek, that although they translated exactly the same, which, so what, so they had a couple the word the, or some articles, or some conjunctions were the same, but they changed things which they knew would bother them. There were certain things which they knew that if Talmai would have read, he would have just gone nuts and probably, who knows what he would have done to the Jewish people. The most famous one is, there's a few interesting ones, but I'll just share one. It says certain things which we're not allowed to eat. One thing which, even if it was kosher, I'm not sure if I would eat it, it's called an arneves, which is a type of hare or rabbit. So it's not mentioned in the Septuagint, at least in the original one, as the Talmud says. And the reason is because they knew that Talmai's wife, her first name was, for whatever reason, Arneves. So he would have been offended if his wife's name was in the Torah and said something negative about her, that there must be something wrong about eating it. So we actually use this, even though the Septuagint's famous and we hear about it, but it was a tragic event. There's nothing wrong with having things translated. In fact, it's great. We live in such an era. You can go online, you can go to a farm shop and read anything, learn anything. But the problem is if it's misused. Talmai wanted to misuse it. And that's the same thing. Nachash looked at the Torah not as, how can I learn from it, but he looked at it in a critical way, which meant nothing wrong with looking at it in a critical way, but in a negative way, that if there's something which you don't agree with, oh, it must be the whole thing is garbage, which is not the proper perspective. You can't walk into learning Torah with that perspective. You have to walk into it as Taurus MS, and some things will not make sense to you. Hopefully you will understand it with deeper learning. Maybe some things we won't, but at least if you walk in with that attitude, then you're not going to end up telling people to gore out their right eye to burn the Sefer Torah. Now, there's a couple other explanations what exactly this means to have the right eye gored out. So we saw two in Rashi. The Chidah gives a different approach. He says, based on what we said, which is actually a pretty sensitive reading to the pasuk we had before, the first pasuk Aleph, he says that what did he want to do? Why did he want to burn the Torah? Because it says that I could come from Ammon, I'm not allowed to enter into the Jewish people. I'm not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. This was actually a response. The question, where did that come from? That was a weird statement. Why would he... That's a weird statement. And also, how does the Medrash Shmuel connect this to the simple explanation of a right eye? Maybe it means a right eye. So the first pasuk, the Chidah, beautifully says that Nachash wanted to basically kill the Jewish people. And they turned to him and said, no, Karaslan of Bris, let's set up a covenant. Let's have a relationship with one another. Which a bris could also include that, you know, we'll do business together, we'll marry into each other. So his response was, give me your right eye, give me this Torah, and I'll show you that it says that we're not allowed to have a covenant. We're not allowed to have a relationship. After all, the pasuk says, lo yavo amoni b'kahal Hashem. So therefore says the Chidah, that's the logic and why that's what was said. The Medrash Shmuel brings down the Yalkut. It says two explanations. One is very difficult to understand. The one's a little easier, so I'm going to go out of order and say the easier one. Rav Simon Omar, he says, what it means the right eye? It doesn't mean take out everyone's right eye. It means El Sanhedrin Shel Yisrael. I want you to give me the great judicial system, all the leaders of the Jewish people, Shein Gilgil Einehem Shel Yisrael, because they open up and reveal Torah to them and the laws. Those are the people that I want. I want to destroy the leaders. That's what he meant by the right eye. By give me the Sanhedrin. In conclusion, the Yalkut also says one other explanation in the name of Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi says, Elu hakaloyim v'kashtim shebi Yisrael. These are referring to the slings and the bows. Not the arrows, but just the bows of the Jewish people. Shein mechamed einehem shel Yisrael, which beautify the eyes of the Jewish people. The Jews love their spears, they love their bows, and their slingshots. So he wanted them. Which, based on that, it's difficult what he meant, that it's beautiful in the eyes of the Jewish people, but it makes sense that what do you want to do if you want to fight an army? They say, set up a covenant. Give me your right eye, it means give me all your weapons, right? Drop your weapon, which is basically what he said, and therefore they would be defenseless. Continue with the next pasuk Gimel. Okay, so that's what he said. Just give me your right eye, no big deal. I'll call it a day. Pasuk Gimel v'yomri elav zikne yavesh. So they said to him, Heref lanu shivas yamin. You know, instead of us just goring out our eye right now, give us 7 days. Let us stick around. Let us wait for a little bit. V'nishlach ha-malachim will send out messengers b'chol gvul Yisrael throughout all the Jewish nation. And because, you know, we're a tiny city. Do us a favor. I know you want to wipe us out and kill us. Why don't you wait until we get tens of thousands of Marines? We'll call up Sahal, the Israeli army. Just wait for 7 days for us to gather up our troops. If, in fact, that there's no one that's going to help us out, then we'll go out with you, which means we'll do whatever you say. Whatever you want us to do, we'll do, even if it means our right eye. Now, the question is, why on earth would he agree to this? Nachash is ready to wipe out a city. Why would anyone say, you know what, could you just wait a second until I get some more ammunition, wait until I, you know, can cross the border, call up a couple other countries? It doesn't make any sense. So the Mitzvah David alludes to this as to why this would actually entice Nachash more. The Mitzvah David says, which is the first part, which is underlined by Pasuk Gimel, Ratzel Lomar, I think this is what the Mesudas David is saying. He says, "Im hakavana bezel lecheref l'chol Yisrael, if your intention is that you'd be willing to let us wait for all the Jewish people to come for a week, hine roy l'hodiyam, Then it'll be fit for them to come. It'll be great. They'll be able to, we'll be able to fight you. The im lo yoshienu az yichashiv lecherpa. However, if we do not have help, then it will be considered a shame. Which means what they're telling Nachash is a big deal. You snuck up on us. We're a tiny city. You want to embarrass us? That's not going to embarrass us by just wiping out this little city. We're defenseless. If you want to really embarrass the Jewish people, let's wait a week. We're going to beg all the Jewish people to come and help us, and they won't. And this strong, mighty King Shaul, which I'm saying it sarcastically, he's not going to be able to help us either. And then you'll wipe us out. Then it'll be a bigger humiliation. It's not just one little city, but it's that we are completely defenseless. Because for you just to sneak up doesn't mean anything. You always see that in like all these violent movies. That at the very end, they have this a guy with a gun, and he's like, and the good guy, the enemy always has the gun, the good guy just has like a knife. He goes, come on, what are you going to shoot me for? Well, you know, you really hate me. And he throws away the gun, they start beating each other up. That's the same thing. Just to pull a trigger doesn't show anything. And he snuck up on me. So wait a little bit. And then if after that week comes by and still no one's here to help me, it'll be a complete humiliation to the Jewish people, which is exactly what you want. Pasuk Dalet. V'yavo ha-malachim giva sha'ol. So the messengers, they went out. They got to give a shul. The yadabra had devarim ba'aznei am, and they spoke exactly what just transpired. The conversation between the city and Nachash. They said it to the ears of the nation. And unfortunately, we're going to see the king wasn't around at the time. Shaul was not there. Ve'yisu kol am es kol ve'yivchu. They heard this and they started crying, which is interesting that they either cried because they felt bad for another Jewish city. Or they realize that, you know, if he's going to wipe out this city, we're next. So we're in big trouble either way. Now, where was this king? This king should be sitting on an exalted throne in his palace. No. We mentioned last parak that when not everyone accepted him as king, he said, okay, I'm not king. He just went back to his house and just went back to business. And that's what we're going to see here, according to some explanations. Pasuk Hei, Behinei Shaul. Behold, Shaul ba achari habakar min hasada. Shaul was hanging out with some cattle. He was a shepherd. You imagine the king. He's already a king, and he's in the field, and he was coming back with some of his cattle. The armor Shaul, and Shaul said, Malam kiyivchu. What's going on? Why is everyone crying? Which a king generally knows what's going on with his people. So he didn't even act like he had any idea what was going on. And that's why, and he didn't know. So he had to ask, why is everyone crying? What's wrong? He was the last to know, right? Sometimes we're always the last to know. So they told him what happened to the poor people in Yavesh, that they had less than a week now, the time is ticking, that they're going to be in big trouble. Now, what exactly does it mean? Did he really come back with his cattle? Is he really a shepherd? It doesn't seem to be the most admirable profession for a king. So if you see Rashi starts off and says, no, come on, there's no way he was actually doing that. That's ridiculous. If you see Rashi, by Pasuk Hey, which is underlined, it says, Achri habakar, achar zman moed bias habakar min asada. He wasn't with the cattle, but he came during a certain time of the day, like during the high noon, or in England, during tea time, whatever that is. So that's when people knew, when people brought their cattle, and that was the time he came. But Rashi's being sensitive of the fact that he's a king. There's no way a king is going to be a shepherd. However, the Radak doesn't feel that that's necessarily the case. We jump now to the Radak, which is to the left of it. Ba'achri Abakar, Kamosha Amar Lamala. It's just like we saw previously in the previous Perek Yud. It says, Vagam Shol Hol Chobeso. It said Shol went back home. What does it mean he went back home? It doesn't mean he just went home. Kamosha Parashti, it's as we explained there, says the Radak. Ba'ayim Asik with Sar Chobeso. He just went back home. He went back to doing his regular things at home. He went together with his servants and all the other people of his employees with his father, and he tended the cattle, which is what he used to do. Because if you remember, the whole reason why he ended up encountering Shmuel, because he lost them as animals, so he was looking for him. So you see, that's what he did. That was his job. He was a shepherd. So he continued to do it. What a humble guy, even though he was a king. He's like, so what? I was a king. Not everyone likes me. I'll go back home and I'll just do whatever I did.
So was he planning not to be the king? I'm not understanding
this. Apparently, at that moment, he didn't want to become a king if people did not accept him completely as a king. So why should I take a position where half the people hate me? Right? He didn't want it. Right? He didn't want to be a king. He didn't ask for it. And when he asked, he right. He always showed that he was humble. He didn't want the position. So right. Yeah, well, we're going to end up seeing in a moment that he will do something positive, at least here. But, he will certainly make his fair share of mistakes as well as king. Jumping one more to the Masudas, David, Achriya Bakar, what does he mean he was after the cattle? Al Kira Shibizoho Lonoha Gamhu Adayin Beatzmo Kabud Malucha. That we saw that he was still doing something which was beneath him, and he did not yet act as a king with his proper honor and respect and glory should act. And he went, similar to the Radak, to help out with a shepherd, as a shepherd, just like a hedyot, just like a regular guy, common person. He didn't act like he was any different, which on some level, that's good. You don't want someone who's on the top of the world that doesn't understand doesn't understand how other people are, which is actually, because it's the first day of school, there's actually a rule in Connecticut that if you want to be a principal in Connecticut, you have to be, I'm not sure how many years it is in New York, but in Connecticut you have to be a teacher for 5 years. Because to be a principal, administrator, and not understand the teachers as being one, so that's the same idea perhaps as a king, he was kederach hahedyot. He acted like a common person, which was an admirable trait. He was able to be sensitive to those people's needs and not just... He had everything he wanted. As we see kings nowadays, their whole country is starving, there's poverty, people are dying of starvation, and yet they're sitting in their palace in the laps of luxury. Pasuk Vav. Batislach Ruach Elokim. So now, until this point, nothing, regular guy. But for some reason, Tislach Ruach Elokim Al Shaul. He was overtaken by this spirit of Hashem, this powerful Ruach, and the Radak says it's Ruach Gevura, strength. He felt very empowered, which maybe means a physically empowered, or himself felt that people were now turning to him for guidance for the first time, and therefore he felt that he should speak up. When he heard these things, and he was furious, he was extremely upset. Which, as a leader, on some level, you're not supposed to express emotion, but if it's you see that people are dying in tragedy, just to ignore them and think, so what, it's a tiny city, that's also obviously not admirable. Post-exine, v'yikach, so what did he do? Now, some of these people were apathetic, they didn't want to fight, I don't want to give up my life, what's the point? But so he wanted to be able to find a way to motivate these people to fight. So what did he do? Beikach semed bakar. He took pairs of cattle, v'natchehu, and he did something which is very strange. He took the cattle and he killed them. Apparently they were alive. He slaughtered them properly, I'm sure. And then afterwards he chopped them up into little pieces. It's kind of gross. You can imagine the scene. V'shalach b'chol gevul Yisrael. And he sent out these pieces of these animals to the nation, biyad hamalachim, through messengers, and this is what they sent through the words of Shaul. Asher inenu yotzei achrei Shaul v'achrei Shmuel. If you do not go after Shaul, and then it says and after Shmuel, it's interesting that we're going to see why it says not just Shaul, but after Shaul or Shmuel. Apparently, because some people still respected Shmuel, some people respected Shaul. So if you don't listen to either of them, this is what will happen to your animals. They're going to be chopped to shreds. So a person heard this, would be like, I have thousands, millions of dollars of livestock. I'm petrified. I don't want to lose all my money. But we'll see. They came to Ishachad, unified. When we stand in unity, of course, we're much stronger. And it says, "V'yipol pachad Hashem." They had a fear of Hashem on the nation. And Matsudas David over here picks up on this. It says, Lo pachad netichat habakar. They weren't concerned only or primarily of the loss of their livestock. They didn't want to rebel against the anointed one, the king, and therefore they were afraid of Hashem and the king who was anointed and appointed through Hashem's word. So therefore they ended up all unifying Ki'ish Echad as one. And so that's how the Masudas David explains it. If we look at the Radak for a moment, why does it say, as we said, Acharei Shaul v'Achar Shmuel? So the Radak says, Lefi Shalu Kibu Osu Klum HaMelech, because after all, as we said, since not everyone already accepted Shaul yet as the king, V'Acharei Shmuel. Therefore, it says if you should come Acharei Shaul, because after all, he's the king. But if you're the few people who are obnoxious and rude that don't accept him as a king, then Acharei Shmuel. You got to accept Shmuel. Shmuel's the Navi. Think about all the things that he did for you. He used to travel from city to city and sacrificing his own life to be able to make it more convenient and comfortable for you to go to your city as opposed to you going to him. So you should come and fight. So for whatever reason, they all came Ki'ish Echad, which I guess also the idea of Ki'ish Echad is, even though some came with the motivation of Shmuel, some for Shaul, so you think, no, I'm not listening to him, they all were able to, at least at a certain point, come together as one. He doesn't talk about him, but apparently he was there.
He was there,
but Shaul's the man, so he doesn't speak in his place, apparently.
It seems to me that they went not just because of their devotion to Shaul and Hashem, but because they were afraid that they had been
You would, certainly, because the fact that they warned them that way.
No, but it says here that they feared God. Wasn't the fear afraid of anything?
I put fear in God in a lot of kids, but sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm sure that was certainly a they didn't, when the messengers, the fact that Shaul chopped up these animals, which we have to discuss how could he have done that, but the fact that he did that and said, this is the message, tell them that this, you know, that this will happen to your cattle. That's what Shaul thought would have motivated. He shouldn't. Otherwise, Shaul would have said.
Motivation would have been rather better to say that Hashem will punish you.
Right.
Hashem wants you to do this.
You know, it is possible. The question you could ask is, how are these animals going to get chopped up and die? Maybe it's. Shaul wasn't necessarily, maybe he would have done it as the king, could have ordered people to just kill out animals, or maybe Hashem would have caused some type of pest. Right. So it's possible, unlike the way that the Masudas David reads it, V'yipol pachad Hashem, is their fear of Hashem, is they know what Hashem could do to their animals, so maybe that's their, it's really not necessarily disconnected. It could be the same thing, possibly. I didn't see that anywhere.
To me, it sounds very.
Because what happened over there?
No, the concubine was cut up.
Oh.
And the bodies, parts were sent all over the country.
It makes sense because especially the other.
That's very.
I'm sure there is somewhere, but I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. But that's an interesting observation.
The first thing I thought about when they cut up the animal, I thought maybe it had something to do.
I don't know, I didn't see it. Well, it sounds logical. Sounds very logical. In fact, I'm sure the place where, I'm not sure the source where it talked in the English about the Pilgrimage Begiva, it's possible it might actually allude to that whole part once it's brought down, but I don't know about that. That's that. There's actually a question about how can you have killed and destroyed, chopped up an animal. We, for those who are vegetarians, there's nothing wrong being a vegetarian. For those people that eat meat, okay, if you're gonna, you're not gonna kill an animal for no reason, you're benefiting from it, fine, the animals are here to serve man. This is something to talk about. But his question, brought down by Rabbi Yeshua Karlinsky, whether or not this is an issue of Baal Tashchis. How could he just take this, these animals and chop them up? It doesn't make any sense. So he explains, he gives a lot of different proofs to this, that Baal Tashchis doesn't just mean destroying it and for eating, or you should have eaten it. Like we always tell the kids, Baal Tashchis, Baal Tashchis, you eat it. And like sometimes, like, you know, you'll get sick yourself. Like, Baal Tashchis, that doesn't make any sense either. But Baal Tashchis doesn't necessarily mean by food. It also means something which serves no purpose. It has a purpose that's not Baal Tashchis. If you're just destroying something which is useful and it's wasted, that's what Baal Tashchis means. So therefore, he explains that Shaul had to set a point. He had to set a certain message. Unfortunately, the only way he could do it was with his visual aid. And by destroying these animals does not constitute Baal Tashchis in this particular context. If you're setting, doing it for a purpose, which is a legitimate reason, you have to question whether or not it is legitimate. Here, I would imagine it was, to be able to save an entire city. Otherwise, people wouldn't have helped.
He's making a statement.
Right.
Also, doesn't it remind you of Chris Van
Oh, that's what I was.
First thing it reminded me.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But again, there was no. I didn't see any connections to that either. I don't know. It's you would think. Yeah, I'm sure if we dig through enough commentaries, I'm sure there is someone that discusses it, but it makes sense. All right, fine. So let's continue with the next pasuk. Pasuk Ches tells us on the bottom page 66, the Ifkidein Bebozek. So at this point, they all were together as an army, and they start. He said, you know, anyone who's not here, we're going to destroy your cattle. So what he had to do is he had to calculate them. Vifkadeim. He had to count them in this place, Bezek, which, according to one explanation, brought down Mesudas Sion, is the name of a place. We're going to see Bezek might have what he used to count them. Because we're not supposed to count a person by one, two, like as a head count, but as we use the Machzis HaShekel, coins or other things, we'll discuss that in a second on the bottom of the Rashi. But let's finish the pasuk. The Ubanei So Shoshmeos Elef. How many people were in this army? So it was Shoshmeos Elef, 300,000. The Ishihuda Shoshim Olef. And for the tribe of Yehuda, there was 30,000. So, I didn't see the reason for it. It might be brought down over here. I think there's some English over here. It says it's a special status. Certainly, Machne Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, represents Malchus, the real kingship, which of course was not Shaul, but. It might be brought down over here. I didn't actually read this piece, but there's a whole paragraph on page 67.
Maybe it's to show that even Yehuda, who really should claim the kingship, were in on this venture.
Because you would think maybe they wouldn't.
He's the king. Let him,
Right. It's also possibly
battle.
Right, especially if. If I'm from the tribe of Yehuda, if that would be the case, I would be very offended that the king was not from my shevet.
Right, exactly.
So it's like I don't want the. I'm not fighting this guy.
They're united.
That he's still.
At this time.
But it's interesting, even though they're united, so they're united, as it said, ki shechad, and we at least wanted to tell us
the fact that even the 300, even the 30,000 from Yehuda. Were counted amongst them.
Yes.
Right. That's nice.
It says in the English, right?
Oh, what does it say?
It says, the verse states that the dread of Hashem fell upon the people, indicating a huge response, 330,000 people.
Right.
Not was evoked not by the fear of Shaul, but by their dedication to Hashem.
Right. Right. Okay. So, Fine. So we mentioned already one explanation brought down in Rashi. What exactly does this mean? Bezek. What does that mean? So he said it means it's the name of a place. That's where you counted them. Why do I need to know the name of the place? What's the significance? Right, that's one explanation brought down also in the Mesudas Sion, which I did not underline. But if you see the Rashi, Rashi gives another explanation. Rashi says, and I didn't see the, we're not going to see the whole thing, just the first line, and then jump down to the bottom. Pasuk Ches says, V'nifkidim b'bozek, Rabbeinu Amru, our rabbis teach us, was actually in the Talmud, means b'shiv, what is b'bezek? Bezek is another word for shivri charasim. Cheres is earthenware. Shever, which is broken, shattered pieces of earthenware, shards, right? So instead of counting them with money, they just gave him a little piece of garbage, a piece of earthenware. So it's brought down later on, if we jump down to the bottom of Rashi, it says, well, sometimes we count with the matzos shekels. Now, for some reason, he uses shards of cheres, of earthenware. What's the point of that? And not only that, sometimes he counts with animals. You have to bring a sheep or a lamb, whatever it is, and he counts them. Okay? So why does he choose pieces of broken cheres, of earthenware? What's the point of that? Pottery. So the bottom part of Rashi says, bottom of the page, it says, and it, some of this is in Aramaic, Lemanu, and we learn from the words that elsewhere, v'yifkinim b'tila'im, that sometimes he counts them not with broken pieces of pottery, but with sheep, with animals, right? So, question is, why does he sometimes use animals, and sometimes why does Shaul use broken pieces of pottery? So, says Rashi, kad inon misaknin, that the reason why that sometimes it's used other materials, so for example, ba'alin biskaya. Biskaya is the cheres, that sometimes when they are poor and they are in danger, they use biskaya. They just use the cheapest things to count them. Cheres. However, kad inon atirin, at a time when they are not in misaknin, when they're not in danger or in poor, but when they're very wealthy, ba'alim imri. Which means he would use animals, he would use sheep, imra. So therefore, in the next part of Rashi says that bezek could just mean the name of a place, as it's mentioned elsewhere. So Rashi says, why does he choose certain things? You can never count them by a head count, but depending on how wealthy they are is what they'll use. And therefore, a king has to be sensitive to the financial, economics, socioeconomic status of his country. And therefore, he looked at his country and he said, I can't ask them to bring their animals. Rather, let them bring these little pieces of shards of cheres, because they're not wealthy. Right? It's possible, which I just thought of, I don't know. The whole problem was, if you don't fight the war, your animals will be destroyed. You're going to lose your animals. So now that they're fighting the war, he's going to ask for those animals? That doesn't make sense. He shouldn't take those animals. Taking those animals is only the people that didn't fight in the war. So perhaps that's another reason, which I didn't see, but nonetheless, perhaps why he had decided not to take animals at this time. Regardless, this is how he counted them, and he counted these pieces of cheres, and he ended up coming up with this large number, 330,000 people. Pasuk Tes. V'yemar ha'malachim, and he said to these messengers, haboyim who are coming, ko somrim le'ish yavesh gilad, go to the city, to Yavesh Gilad, where the Jewish people are, and say that machar tielachem, that tomorrow there will be, next page, teshua. There will be a tremendous salvation for you, kichom hashamesh, as the sun gets hot. We're going to see the war is going to end even before that time. They told the Jewish people in the city that the Jewish people are going to gather together, not a tiny little amount of people, a few hundred thousand people. And what was their reaction? Better believe it, they'd be happy. Pasigyud, they thought they were going to be dying or losing their eyes, who knows. But Yomar Anshi Yavesh, Machar Neitz Aleichem. So in fact, what happened is the people of Yavesh, they went the next day, and they went to Nachash, and they said, V'yasisem lanu kechol atov beinechem. He told them everything that was going to transpire, and they said, you know what, do whatever is good in your eyes. Interesting, they use the same analogy, eyes, right? Plural. Do whatever you think is good. Whatever you want to do, do. But you should know that we mean business, and you're probably not going to live. All right. And just see the Masuda Sion, which is the last thing underlined, because there's not a lot of other material here, which I want from these four. The Masuda Sion says, Kechom HaShemesh, from the heat of the sun, Kashi Yischamim HaShemesh B'Gvoraso, when the sun is at its highest point, V'Uchate Yom. That's going to be in the middle of the day. We're going to see again, that's when the war will end, which will show the sensitivity of the king, that not only does he allow them to fight, when he fights, he wants to make sure that they're not going to fight during the hottest points of the day, so that they'll be able to relax afterwards and not have to become dehydrated or whatnot. Okay, pasuk it off. So what ends up happening? Now we have to get ready for the bloody war. Ve'ehim macharos, the next day came, Biyasim Shaul El Am Shlosha Rashim, and Shaul came. Shaul, although he's the king, he didn't care. He's going to join them, and he had three different groups. Biyavo Besocha Machne, Biyashmor Saboker, and he went to the camp in the morning. Biyaku Es Amon Ad Chom Hayom, and he afflicted and hit Ammon, which is Nachash's nation, because he came from Ammon, which is why he got all upset about the fact that we can't marry into the Ammonim. We afflicted and killed them and wiped them out until the heat of the day, which, as Masuda Sion again told us, means 12 o'clock, or Chatzot, midday. V'ahi ha'nisharim v'yafotsu v'nisharu bam shnayim yachad. We couldn't kill everyone out, but the people that we were unsuccessful in killing, they ran all over the place, but there wasn't even two. There was no unity at all. We were Ish Echad. We were completely together. They couldn't even have two people together. They were completely dispersed. Divide and conquer. Pasuk Yud Beis, V'yomer ha'am el Shmuel. So the nation turned to Shmuel, and they were so happy. They couldn't believe they won this war. Everything's great. But they were bothered and angered about something. What were the Jewish people upset about now? Mi Omer, Shaul Yimloch Aleinu. Who is the people that said, the question I had to read this, Shmuel should be rule over us. Shaul should rule over us. He should be the king over us. In other words, they wanted to know, who are these people that when you were initially appointed as the king, that they denied you that honor? We want to know who they are. Why? They want to give them some type of a prize? No. Tanu hanashim unmisim. We want to know who these men are, because we will kill them. Because we believe they were mord b'malchus. They rebelled against the king. Even though it didn't happen today, it happened in the past. We want to kill them. Give us that list. Who's on your blacklist who you want to wipe out? Like the mafia. We'll kill them for you. No problem. For showing the disrespect that they showed to the king, right? So Shaul is like, wow, that's cool. People are going to kill for me? That's pretty good. What does Shaul say? Forget it. The armor Shaul, lo yumas ish b'yom hazeh. Don't kill anyone today. Which question maybe means, tomorrow is all right, but he doesn't say that. He says, don't kill anyone today. Ki hayom asa Hashem teshuva b'Yisrael, because today is a day in which Hashem did a tremendous salvation for Klal Yisrael, for the Jewish people. So to have a day which is like a hybrid, where there's good things that happened and then tragedy, let's not have that. Let's earmark today just as a day of salvation. So I don't want you to do that at all. Which... apparently, it could imply kill tomorrow, But it really, what he said was, don't kill them at all. It was actually brought, it's brought down as a question whether or not, with regard to this concept of being mourned by Malchus, rebelling against the king, whether or not a person is allowed to wait and stall. In other words, if a guy was mourned by Malchus, rebelled, they're allowed to be killed. The king is allowed to wipe them out. But he didn't. He went back home, right? So the question is, if that's so, did the king lose his opportunity to be have this person or group of people killed? Or do we say that once a person is mourned by Malchus, even if it happens 10 years later, you can go back, right? Is there a statute of limitations for mourned by Malchus? So that's the basic question that's presented. And some of the Mefarshim say that there is not. That there really is not, because the fact is that Shaul was asked, should we kill them? Now, they might not have known the answer, whether they're allowed to. Shaul said, nah, don't do it, because today is a day of salvation, which implies that the reason why you can't kill them is because it's a good day. But otherwise, you would be allowed to. Which means that once a person is guilty of rebelling against the king, even though it may take a year or 2 years for the king to react to it, you can be punished and sentenced to death for that at any point. There's no statute of limitations for being mourned by Malchus, at least according to those explanations based on those psukim. Okay, let's see the last two psukim, which will conclude the parak. You'll see on the side, it's interesting, question of why this is so, we'll probably get a better understanding when we see the next parak, that this is the Haftorah for Parshas Korach. Okay. B'yomer Shmuel, and you see, this is what's one of the nice things about the art scroll, Navi, is that it tells you exactly where it begins. It's interesting, it doesn't begin at the beginning of the parak, it starts two psukim in. So there's obviously something significant about these two psukim in the next parak, which have some correlation, connection to Korach, which we'll talk about maybe next week. B'yomer Shmuel el Am, so Shmuel said, L'chu v'nelcha ha-Gilgal. So he said, come and let's go to this place, to Gilgal, v'nechanisham ha-Melucha, and we will start new, the being a melech, being a king. V'yelchu kol am ha-Gilgal, and the nation went to this place, v'yamlichu sham el-Shaul, and there they truly acknowledged Shaul as a king, v'fnei Hashem b'Gilgal, in front of Hashem. And what did we do? As a celebration, we break out the champagne, we have some sushi. V'yizbechu sham zvachim shlomim lifnei Hashem. The way that we acknowledge and show our appreciation of Karas HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by bringing sacrifices to Hashem, which nowadays would be tefillah, our davening and resetting of Tehillim. V'yizmach sham sha'ol v'chol anshei Yisrael ad ma'od. And with this celebration, it wasn't just that they were happy, Shaul and the nation, but it was ad ma'od. It was so much. They were so extremely happy that they were saved. And not only that they were saved, all they did was really save a small little town, but it shows the unity, again the achdus, that they were ish echad in milchama, in war, and also they were ish echad, unified also after the war, when they celebrated, and shows their simcha for all of the Jewish people, everyone. Stop here.